The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week. It's Colombia Calling again. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in my garden with my neighbor's dog barking away. But that's how it is. It's the garage element of this podcast, and that's why you feel like you know my neighbors and you know their dogs and you know my dog and everything else. This is episode 223. And yes, we keep going and we keep getting out there. We keep pushing the envelope a little bit and trying to tell the stories that are not being told about Colombia. And well, I'm very happy to say that this week we have another very special guest on the show. He's in Medellin. He's Anglo-Peruvian, so might actually be the first person of Peruvian descent that we've had on Colombia Calling, which is kind of amazing. But he's in Medellin at the moment. His name is Danny Concha, and he's an Anglo-Peruvian filmmaker. But he's born and raised in England, as you'll note from his accent. But he's doing some really cool stuff here in Colombia, and that's what brought him to our attention. And so we're getting him on the show to talk a little about what he's up to, what he's doing, and, you know, why Colombia? You know, why not Peru? But that's for him to say. So, Danny, welcome on Colombia Calling.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the invite. It's a pleasure to be here. To cut a long story short, I'm now kind of almost 9 months into my year in Colombia, and it's been part of my universities as a year abroad, technically.
Oh, right.
But the object of this year is basically to build an understanding of Colombia, working with a project called Yo Creo en Colombia, or I Believe in Colombia, which is based in Pueblo called Choachi, just outside Bogota. And that's what I've been doing sort of on and off these last 8 to 9 months, and what I'll continue to be doing. But on the side, something that has really kind of become very passionate about has been starting this YouTube channel, Danny Concha on YouTube, which is basically looking to capture all the like little moments of magic, of the unexpected and of the unknown in Colombia, kind of whilst traveling around.
Excellent. I mean, so this is your let's say your year abroad from university, or like, I guess that's the third year. What university are you at?
So I'm at the university, University College London.
Nice.
It's been a bit of a wait on this one because I had a bit of a crazy crazy start to university. I was at the University of Oxford, and after my second year, I decided to take a year out in Southeast Asia, and ended up not coming back. And so now I've kind of just finished my second year at UCL, mm-hmm. And so it's been a long time waiting, and I was always so excited about the prospect of going to Colombia, mm-hmm. based on the Colombians I'd met at Oxford and in London, mm-hmm. and working very closely with the Colombian community in London as well, certain projects.
Very cool indeed. You know, not a lot of us have these opportunities, and now you're making it happen. So the project that you've got is this, the YouTube project, Danny Concha. You can find that, obviously, on the very, very popular website. But this was the project. This is what they're accepting for your year abroad, you to be doing these documentaries?
No, so technically, the year abroad is about doing an 8-month placement. It's uh-huh. about getting work experience. I mean, I was always attracted more to the work experience side than doing a university exchange or something like that. That wasn't great for me. Probably because I just spent so long in unis anyway.
Yeah.
But the film project has just become sort of the thing that's been a hobby, but it's kind of become my main kind of passion. So it's become the thing that I've really, really been sort of traveling around Colombia for, really pushing this year. So it's not technically part of the university. It's just a, it's a side project, but something that I've, that I think has become, yeah, something really important to me.
Excellent. We'll explore that in a little bit. But tell us a little bit more about Yo Creo en Colombia. I mean, I've met Pedro Medina, the brains behind this. Dude, how did you end up finding a placement with him then?
So I made this contact with Pedro in Oxford through a good friend of mine. We were in the Latin American Society of Oxford together. And Pedro is just this sort of very eccentric, incredible man who has this, yeah, this foundation with over 3,000 sort of people. It's like a big network of Colombians and foreigners all around the world. It's a fascinating initiative that's based in Choachi, where they have this incredible house built out of mud and wood, and sort of, you know, they grow their own food and produce, almost like a commune in a way. But the idea is it's become a hub where people get together and discuss ways to construct confidence and build confidence in Colombia. I mean, because they work off the premise, essentially, that Colombia suffers a profound crisis in confidence. In the sense that it's not, in many ways, it struggles to see all the good that it has. And that the kind of, in many ways, the mentality that sort of, the paradigm is that Colombians often see the negative rather than the positive. And so it's an initiative that looks to promote all the hidden assets, all the virtues and all the values of Colombia, all through conferences, but more than anything by example, by creating these incredible events that try to bring people together, that build what they refer to as social capital, and that make people basically, that build trust amongst Colombians and in Colombia itself.
That's excellent. So it's this issue of confidence, which I think it runs through all Colombians, obviously because of the identity crisis that Colombians have, and of obviously the quite horrific history that Colombians have lived. And yes, this has to affect the national psyche and identity. And is there something that they do up there in this, let's see, as you call the commune up in Choachi, the Trueque?
Yeah, Trueque. So Trueque was one of the first things that I did when I arrived in Colombia. And honestly, it was one of the most amazing experiences of my life. And it was just a perfect way to start and to sort of initiate this beautiful journey through this incredible country. And that was a Trueque, which is built on an Inca system of exchange and reciprocity. Mm-hmm. The idea that we can kind of create a system of hand-to-hand trading where there's no money involved, and where the act of trading just becomes almost like an excuse for bringing people together and for building networks and for connecting people that wouldn't otherwise connect. And what the Trueque involved is, and that took place in Choachi, and that was sort of my first big job, was kind of helping lead that Trueque, is that we invited 1,200 people from Choachi and from Bogota to come together in a weekend in August. And the idea was that everyone from Bogota would bring things that were surplus to requirements in the city. So we could talk blenders, we could talk disused bicycles, books, old rugs, mobile phones, any kind of stuff that they didn't need anymore. And the people of Choachi would bring all their surplus in natural produce. So huaquilas or papapobres, which is this incredible fruit that grows in Choachi in abundance and is anti-carcinogenic. Mm-hmm. Then there's also the altamisa, like a herb that gets rid of the anti-mosquito, anti-fleas, and all these kind of potatoes and turnip and all kinds of vegetables and fruit. And the idea was that they got together and made these exchanges, so exchanging a blender for 5 ears of corn, or a chicken, or some eggs, or some books. And it was a beautiful experience of kind of building a bridge between the city and the countryside, which are often so isolated. And we ran a survey in Choachi, and most people, and the thing that came up most, was that the people there felt isolated. Mm-hmm. They felt that they weren't at all connected to Bogota, despite being so close, a 40-minute bus away from Bogota. Mm-hmm. And they felt like they were living on two islands. And so the idea and the end goal of the Trueque was to sort of break down that invisible barrier between the city and the countryside. And based on like how it went, we thought it was a huge success, and we're planning to do another one next August, make it even bigger. It's been running for about 4 years now, and last year was a huge hit, so we're hoping the next year is going to be even bigger.
That's very cool indeed. So in theory, I could turn up, should I be invited, I could turn up with like an old laptop and exchange it for, I don't know, a sack of potatoes.
Absolutely, yeah, exactly that.
I would prefer that.
It's not about the value of the product.
Yeah.
It's about how much value it has to you. So an old laptop has very little value to you,
yeah,
because you have your new laptop, you're never going to use it. Whereas a kilo of potatoes to someone who can, you know, you can make soup, so they can do all sorts of things with the potatoes. So it actually has more value. So it's not kind of like, oh, this laptop, its retail value is, you know, $1,000. It's more, what is this? You have to ask yourself, what is its value to you? And then what is the value of the other product to someone else? And that's how you go about doing that exchange.
That's excellent. I like that idea very much. I mean, I think it's, you know, I mean, so you had 500,000, several hundred people there this last time. For August, how many people do you think you can get?
Well, I mean, we just hope, you know, every person that comes invites a couple more people, three more people. And that's how it kind of goes growing. Because if you look at the trajectory of the event, every year it's been going up by 500, 400, 500 people. So the idea is that hopefully next year it goes even bigger. I mean, we have the whole town center of Chuachi to fill. So the idea is, yes, the more the merrier, absolutely.
They do it in the plaza in Chuachi?
Yeah, in the main plaza in Chuachi.
Wow.
It used to be up in the Minga, which is the sort of commune-type base of Yokono, Colombia. But because of its growing size, we've now moved it to the main plaza. It becomes a whole event. It just takes over the pueblo. And it's a really beautiful, really beautiful phenomenon.
Excellent. Excellent. I love the idea of this. I love the idea that this is taking place. Now, do I need an invitation or can I just turn up on the date?
Just turn up. The idea is you want to reach out to as many people. I'll be sure to send you a flyer on your Twitter or whatever. But the idea is, yeah, it's to share the information. No invite needed. Anyone can come. And it's just a challenge of getting as many people aware of it as possible.
Okay, perfect. I like the idea. So keep us involved, keep us informed, because I'd like.
I'm sure people who are
interested in this will be listening to this podcast, or of course watching the Facebook page. Put it down on your list that I would like to go, please, and
you'll be sure to hear about it.
And also, you know, it's just one of those things that sounds interesting. But, you know, Chuachi is kind of isolated. It used to be. And even today, I've been to Chuachi half a dozen times or a dozen times and stuff. But you know, as an escape from Bogota, but even today, you talk to a Bogotano, a friend, and say, you know, I'm going up to Chuachi. Well, isn't that on the road that used to be Zona Roja? And of course, it used to be all those years ago. Today, no issue whatsoever. But, you know, it's something, again, it's the mindset about the conflict and the issues and the danger. But now you can go. Now, I've been once with my son, who's 2, turning 3 very soon. And we plan not to go again quite so soon, because on the way back, all those curves over the mountain road really affected him. I have to say, it was projectile. Yeah, it was projectile, but not one chunk hit my car. It all actually landed on my wife. So there we go.
Well,
small mercies, let's say. But never mind. That's a side talk about that. But I think this is very interesting indeed. So you're going to be here. And so how long are you going to be here until in Colombia? When do you have to go back to UCL?
So I'm back in UCL for September. So
okay.
Now
soon.
August.
Yeah.
To sort of basically kind of finish up the work I'm doing. Well, I say finish, to continue the work I'm doing in Colombia, and then do a little trip over to Peru because my dad's from Cusco, Peru, so I'm going to go there, and we're continuing another project there in Peru.
And you're going to start now. I can release that in information. You're going to start the Yo Creo in Peru.
Exactly. Yeah, I've been working very closely with Pedro over the last 3 weeks to initiate a new expansion of Yo Creo en Colombia to create Yo Creo en Peru, which is going to look to basically do the same thing that kind of Pedro has been building over the last 20 or so years, but to initiate that in Peru. So try to get the same kind of concept working, where we create a network of Peruvians around the world, try to build confidence in all the assets of Peru, try to understand and try to get behind what it means to be Peruvian. What are the potential that Peru has? What are the problems that Peru has? And most fundamentally, what are the paradigms that Peruvian has? What are the excuses? Like getting behind the reasons why a country with such abundance and such beauty and such diversity and such potential often sort of falls back on that same crisis in confidence and low self-esteem, where they don't believe that they can, where they believe that the foreign is better, that the Western is better. We want to change all those mentalities too. So that's what I'll be doing in July, August.
Wow, very good. But I mean, does Peru suffer from this in as much as Colombia does?
I mean, I say absolutely, yeah. I mean, both Peru, obviously Colombia's become very close to my heart as well. And just with the work that the foundation is doing, we really realize that there's so much in common, I think, with a lot of Latin American countries. Mm. It's just the idea that it's just the idea of negative images, really, that they have these negative images of themselves. And I think it goes without saying that it kind of creates, amongst many people, an inferiority complex. Like the amount of times in Colombia I've had people ask me, you're from London. Oh, how's it? It's so nice in London. Mm. How is everything in England? Like, it must be amazing living there. And I always have to challenge it. I always say, well, like, you know, Medellin is an incredible city too. And there are so many things in Medellin that London doesn't have. And I always say, you know, which a Peruvian actually told me, which is that often people have that belief. And then if they do come and end up studying in the UK or moving to the UK, it's that the moment they arrive, they start realizing all the things that the UK or that America or whatever doesn't have, that Latin America has an abundance as a continent. And so, I mean, well, that the Americas has in a continent. And I think Peru definitely has that too, that concept that the grass is always greener on the other side. Mm-hmm. And they don't really realize that actually it's not about thinking about the other side. It's about watering your own grass and making sure that flourishes.
Excellent. Well, thank you for that. We're going to take a short break. We're talking to Danny Concha, who's an Anglo-Peruvian, let's say, student documentary maker, de todero, working with Yo Creo in Colombia and starting up Yo Creo en Peru very soon. So very exciting indeed. He's on the line from Medellin. We're going to take a short break and we'll come back. But do check out his website. That's DannyConcha.com. And, of course, the YouTube site. Just look up Danny Concha. And that's what we're going to explore in the second segment of this show and talk further about his life as a filmmaker here in Colombia. So don't go away. We'll be right back. We've been unearthing some interesting concepts and theories and topics here on Colombia Calling. And yes, we'll be, just a short break and come back and talk further to Danny Concha. Thank you for listening. And we're back. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall here in Bogota, Colombia. This is the second segment of episode 223. We're talking to the Anglo-Peruvian filmmaker, documentary maker, a little bit of everything. That's Danny Concha. He's in Medellin. He's on the line to us now. We're talking, basically about what he's doing, why he's in Colombia, why not Peru. But then we learnt, obviously, that he will be in Peru. He'll be starting up the Yo Creo en Peru brand, let's say, down there. He explained to us that Peru suffers from a little bit of an identity crisis, and I think it's true. I've spent a lot of time down there. I love the country very much. I was down a few years ago again. And taking my wife for the first time, and she loved it too. And of course, we ate ourselves silly. But we're talking about Colombia, of course. This is Colombia Calling, and I want to know, and I know that my listeners want to know just a little bit more about the documentaries you've been making in Colombia. And I've had a look at a couple of them, and of course, they're all of issues that are close to my heart and fascinating to me. You've done this, an interview with the FARC, former rebels in Zona de Transición. You've done an interview with a guy making his volteados and the Zenú, so hats. Of course, you've done hip-hop in Medellín. These are called Cuentos Colombianos, and of course, you did something else in Teusaquillo down there, Parkway, the Museo de Basura, which of course I love as well. But tell us, how do you end up picking these subjects, or how do you end up deciding, I want to do this? It's not everyone who gets down to a FARC, transitional camp, Danny. Tell us about that experience.
There's a really new bench to me. Mm-hmm. Really opened my eyes. So the possibility, and like, if anything, of searching out stories in places and territories which you're not familiar with. Like you mentioned why Danny in Colombia and Peru. The reason why I wanted to move to Colombia was that I don't know anyone in Colombia. I didn't know very much about Colombia aside from what my friends at university, my Colombian friends, had told me. And so it was an exciting prospect to discover something completely new. And what filmmaking does, and the beauty of filmmaking, is it not only makes you look out for the little moments of magic and the little kind of pieces of the little jewels everywhere, but it actually makes them come to you. And I think that's what I found most incredible about this experience, is that you ask how I found these things, how I looked for them, but that in most cases, what actually happened is that those opportunities would come to me because, so in the case of a FARC, for example, I literally arrived in Medellin. It was my first day in Medellin. I just arrived after having done 2 months in Bogota and a month in Barranquilla, exhausted from all the fun and revelry of Barranquilla. And I went around the Feria de Libros, which is the book fair, an annual book fair they do in Medellin. I thought that'd be a great chance just to, you know, maybe make a friend, get to know some people, etc. And there was this woman who had a little stool. And she was basically talking about the peace deal and specifically about disarmament and giving anyone who would listen leaflets, trying to explain exactly what was happening, how many guns had been handed in, how it had been going, etc., etc. And I was just curious, so I stopped and started talking to her. And you know, we just had a friendly chat. And I mentioned to her, I said, oh yeah, so I'm making these documentaries. Like, I've had a lot of fun filming stuff in the coast and in Bogota and all these incredible people, etc., etc. And just like that, she said, oh, well, my French husband is a filmmaker as well. So you guys should definitely meet up. But more importantly, like, if you want to come to the camp at some point and do an interview, we'd be delighted to have you. Just, you know, just let me know. And she gave me her number and it was fun. And I was like really excited by it. And the truth be told, I then met another couple of people and the number just kind of, you know, was there in my phone, just kind of waiting. And two months later, because I was just settling in Medellin, 2 months mm-hmm. later, I had an evening where I was just kind of twiddling my thumbs a little bit I was working quite hard for my placement. And I just remembered the number. So I messaged her and I just said, hey, Angelica, this is completely out of the blue, but I was wondering if I could still take you up on that offer to do a film. And she said to me, oh, what amazing timing. Literally, on this day, literally day after tomorrow, we will be having this Halloween party in the camp where all the children are going to do a Halloween parade, all the children of the FARC, and it would be awesome. We need someone to film it. Can you come? And so literally, within half an hour, I was on a bus to Dabeiba, a night bus to Dabeiba in approaching Urubá, and I got off in the early hours of the morning, basically had to ask the hotel lady to let me sleep in the reception because I can only get a couple of hours sleep, and then in a motorbike all the way up to the camp. And it was just honestly a sensational experience in terms of just opening your eyes to the reality of life in a disarmament camp. And I mean, to give you just a few highlights, and this is looked in the video. I had a really interesting conversation with an ex-commander of the FARC, mm-hmm. basically about his thoughts on the peace deal, and he comes up with some beautiful, beautiful quotations and beautiful lines about war being the massacre between poor people, and how a policeman and a military man and a guerrilla are all essentially campesinos. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about the idea that there's so much written about war, so much written about how to make war. You've got all these writers on war theory, but there's so little written about peace and how Colombia is completely off script in terms of understanding how this peace deal is going. But the more, even more beautiful thing of this was this Halloween party, which is just such perfect timing to send that message the day before. And what that involved, and it was absolutely beautiful, was that all the 60 children of FARC members who were there at the camp got together and dressed up and did a big Halloween sort of fancy dress competition. And we had a guerrilla and a military man working together as clowns, both dressed up as clowns, basically entertaining the children, handing out kind of Colombian sweets and hot dogs and all that. And there were members of the military in their uniform blowing balloons, painting the faces of the children as Spider-Man and as, you know, lions or whatever, and just seeing all these kind of these different sectors interacting. So we had ex-guerrilla fighters, we had government elephant modulators and even some paramilitaries, because in Dabeiba there are paramilitaries mm-hmm. as well who've disarmed, all interacting together in this wonderful sort of child-focused fancy dress party. And just kind of seeing those images was a real eye-opener for me. And it makes you realise how every story has 5 or 6 or 10 or 50 or 1 million perspectives.
Yeah.
And that, like, you know, you can read about the disarmament, but in this case, this is something complete. This is a completely different face, and to have the opportunity to capture that for me was honestly one of the most beautiful experiences of my time in Colombia.
This is the ground level change, changing and challenging perceptions and humanizing between military, FARC, paramilitaries. People. That's what is so important. Is what you mentioned it earlier in the first segment, the division between urban and rural. And my listeners will be absolutely fed up with me talking about it, but it's the absolute truth here in Colombia. It's the absolute truth, the division between urban and rural. But when these things happen on the ground in the rural area, it is bringing about change and humanization of people. The guerrillas are not seen as rats in tunnels, like Santos referred to them back in 2008. You know, they're seen as people. Tell us something really basic, and people will condemn me for sounding trivial. But in this, let's say, Halloween party where the children dressed up, these children who have been deprived, let's say, ordinary upbringings in towns or villages or cities because they've been in encampments and so on. How do they dress up? What are their cultural references? Did they dress up as Spider-Man? Did they dress up as witches? How did they dress up?
Well, it was really interesting, actually, because first of all, a really interesting point is that a lot of these children, and this is one that's raised in the interview with the commander, a lot of these children were only just recently being reunited with their parents. So a lot of them hadn't seen their parents for most of their lives. So it was really interesting to see that interaction as well, and hearing those stories about seeing your son for the first time in 5, 10 years and all that kind of thing. But in terms of the costumes, of course you've got your Spider-Mans, you've got your princesses and your Disney princesses and all that kind of stuff. But what also struck me as really funny was there was a bit of humor in it as well. So there was, for example, one of the prize winners was this young girl who dressed up as a policeman, as a police officer. and another one was a boy who dressed up as a military man. The two of them got together and they were playing some reggaeton. And these two children, as prize winners, were kind of dancing and doing these funny dances as dressed in uniform with the two clowns. I said, with a clown from an ex-guerrilla dressed as a clown and an ex-military dressed as a clown. The four of them together did this really funny dance, completely spontaneous and improvised. But it's just like a really interesting way. And it's not of trivializing the situation, but just, as you said, humanizing it and showing that kind of these children dressed up as policemen and as military fighters, but dancing and having fun and enjoying themselves. That sort of, for me, it was really almost kind of poetic moment of showing how, like, children can make you realize that we're all the same, we can all have fun, we can all, you know, just connect on a more human level when you get rid of those things like uniforms and labels and tags and all that kind of stuff that makes us sort of, as you said, that creates those barriers between a campesino and a ciudadano or a guerrilla fighter and a military man. And so that was a really beautiful moment.
It's incredible. And I think, you know, the FARC didn't want their zones of transitional zones, their reintegration zones to be like in a fishbowl and to have visits. But I really do think that there should have been a greater, let's say, involvement. The government, I don't say about putting people on buses and driving them down there, but just a greater involvement, participation, conversation between guerrillas and you know, regular people. Take, you know, maybe school groups. We're not looking at giving, let's say, children from top-ranking schools in Bogota, Medellin, Cali, indoctrination in Marxist theory. But just going down to talk to who these people are and sharing an experience. I mean, it would have been great to just take some, let's say, school children down and mixing them up with some of the local local children and having like a football tournament. Who doesn't play football in Colombia? Again, it's just these opportunities to show you the other side. So, I mean, you were party to this. You can now tell that story. You can now, by way of your blog articles, by way of your documentaries, you can share with that. But there are so many people now in this incredibly polarized situation with the election running now before May 27th and the presidential elections, where they're still talking about this, and I hate saying it, but this, we're going to turn over to become Castro Chavista, and we're going to be like this, and we're going to be like that. Okay, let's just get this out of the way. Not even 1% of people turned out to vote for the FARC, and yet they are still here. They're people. They represent a portion of society. You don't have to vote for them, but they are people. And they are demobilizing. Yes, it's not 100% successful, but the more that we become socially aware about, again, this rural-urban divide, surely this is a good thing. And I guess my pinko lefty liberal beliefs are seeping out there, but that you went down, I've been down to the transitional zone in Guaviare, talked to people, and these guys, they just want to farm their land. You know, they just want to get on with life, mm-hmm. these guys. The kids just want to, again, participate. They just want to be included. They want to be, you know, it's a different world. And so before I get on my soapbox, let's move on. You know, you've been around the country a lot. And let's talk about the Museo then. Let's talk about something else. Let's talk about the Museo de Basura and in Bogota. Let's jump subjects and talk about this. I mean, this big bagpuss-looking guy who lives in his museum of rubbish, which is essentially it, or museum of trash, depending on how you want to understand me. But it's in Teusaquillo, just a couple of blocks off Parkway, so a really nice part of Bogota. You went in there to interview this guy who is, well, I'll let you say it. All I can say is he's certainly a character.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Casafus, his name is Casafus, is this incredible character / philosopher / teacher who lives, he's dedicated 26 years of his life to living and surrounding himself in rubbish, essentially. And he got brought to my attention by a friend who I met in working with Yo Creo in Colombia. Someone just said to me, "Oh, you've got to meet this guy. He will just turn your world upside down for a half an hour, and you've just got to go and check him out." So we did. I went with two friends, and it really is quite the experience. And if you have a chance to go to Bogota, I honestly suggest paying him a visit, because what he basically does is he has this big sign outside his house where it literally looks like a garbage dump from the outside. And it just says, "Enter if you dare. The door is always open." And so it piques your curiosity, and people, you know, he said every day you get a handful of people, you wander in, and you just see, and you go in, you draw back the this sort of a curtain made of rubbish, and you just see all these disused bicycles and pill packets and literally trash. And you wander upstairs, and there he is, day in, day out, sitting on his sofa, hardly ever moves. He drinks a liter of whiskey every day, and he hasn't really left his house properly for those 26 years. And we sat down, and we had a conversation with him, and he basically, what he's doing is he was an artist. What's almost more fascinating is his backstory. He was a hugely successful artist who went to Europe, he studied in Paris. He won a Monaco Prize for his art, and then one day just decided that he wanted to completely change his life and teach the new generation about the cost and the repercussions of our consumer society of buying, 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 waste, waste, waste. And so he lives like this to create what he calls a pedagogy of shock, pedagogía de choque, which is that you go in and you're so shocked and disgusted and appalled by what you see and by the conditions that he lives in. You know, his hair is all matted, like almost in dreadlocks, but like not deliberate dreadlocks, matted dreadlocks. He wears glasses upside down. He's incredibly overweight. And like I say, he drinks whiskey every day. And you're so appalled and shocked by what you see that you have to question your own consumer's habits. Because what he says, and he comes up with a very funny story in the interview, he basically says that a woman walked past my house and she came in and said to me, "What in God's name is all this about? What the most disgusting way do you live as the most disgusting person? You surround yourself by filth. And he just looked at her and he says, well, madam, with all due respect, this isn't my filth. This is your filth. Mm. I have spent 26 years living without ever buying anything. The only thing I buy in my life is potatoes, vegetables, and whiskey. All of this rubbish that you see surrounding you isn't my rubbish, it's your rubbish. So if you have a problem with this house, it's not about taking it up for me, you've got to take it up for yourself. And that's kind of, you know, and he does it with humor, he does it with a lot of references to the philosophy. He compares himself to the Socrates, he talks about all the myth of the bazaar and all these kind of different Greek stories, and he basically uses that to create his own philosophy, which is that if we don't stop consuming, we're going to end up living in a world like the one he's created for himself.
It is fascinating. It's fascinating. I put it in a little, I made sure it was included in a little guidebook that I helped write last year about Bogota, called Bogota Through the Five Senses. And so it's about, you know, the taste, touch, smell, sight, etc. And of course, I made sure that the Museum of Basura, Museo de Basura, was in there because it is an assault on the senses. It is. It is everything. If you want to find that guidebook, just check out on Amazon, put Five Senses Bogota. You can buy it as an ebook. Of course, you can buy it in person here in bookstores in Bogota. But no, fantastic. And fantastic being able to meet him and talk, and he's willing to share, of course, that those experiences, because it is important as well. I mean, he takes it to an extreme. It's like a bit like walking into an open trash dump. I mean, a piece of landfill on a corner of Bogota, but equally so, he's got a story to tell, he's got something to say, and these things are important, aren't they? These things are important. So tell us, I mean, we're winding down, we've got about 5 or 6 more minutes here, Danny. What have been, I mean, you know, what other kind of anecdotes do you have to tell us? I mean, first of all, actually, let's say, I mean, you've got this YouTube channel, but what is your actual background in filmmaking? Do you have a background in it? Because it is of a high quality, your interview and your recording. It's not just, you know, sort of like garage like this podcast, and I apologize for you, for those of you listening who had the military helicopter flying overhead just now. It was one of the issues of being in Colombia. But what is your background in filmmaking?
I mean, the funny thing is with this whole project is that I have absolutely no background in filmmaking prior to starting this channel. I mean, the only background of filmmaking that I did have was in London. And it was, I would call it a failed background, and a background that sort of created frustration that led to my desire to start actually really kind of pushing through with this. And I was just in London, and there was an incredible case, which I worked on as an interpreter, in Seven Sisters Road, which is a Colombian market, which is actually what inspired my decision ultimately to come to Colombia, the people that I met there. But it's basically, and I'll cut a long story short, but it's an incredible story about an abandoned building that got taken up by Colombian migrants, I think about 26 years or so ago, or maybe 22 years ago, and turned into what is known as like a pueblito paisa, like a little piece of Colombia in London, in the sense that they play salsa music, they have all of the news is in Spanish, Colombian news, all the Colombian food, and it's become a real hub for the Latin American community to get together in London, especially new arrivals when they need help with finding lawyers or with learning English, all that kind of stuff. It's become a really important space. And anyway, they wanted to, and there's an ongoing debate market has been bought up by a construction company that wants to make luxury apartments, and there's a huge sort of gentrification battle over that market. And I really wanted to make a documentary about that with a friend from UCL. Mm. And we sat down and we planned and we thought about a team and we thought about what kind of interviews and what kind of angle and what do we want to project, what didn't we want to project. And we basically were guilty, and I take most of the responsibility for this, of completely over-planning the whole thing. And inevitably, it never happened. It never came into fruition. We just had all these ideas, and it never happened, and it just left me feeling really, really pissed off with myself for having this great concept that we could have worked with, and then not doing it. And so when I came to Colombia, I just decided that with filmmaking, in my experience, you can think about the theory, you can think about about the angles, what you want to capture. But at the end of the day, especially for someone who's starting out, the most important thing is just to just get in there, get stuck in. And so that's what, I mean, that's how it happened in Colombia. I didn't plan what my first interview was going to be. It just happened. I met this incredible man called Alejandro Garcia in La Calera.
Yeah.
And he's a pilot. He's 76 years old. He's a pilot to this day. And he's crashed 11 times. And he's still a pilot. And he has this fascinating story about sort of getting knocked down and getting back up again. And the way that as a pilot, the important thing is that every day you go again. And he has a story about flying over Via Vicencio back 10, 15 years or so ago. And seeing this campesino, this guy from the countryside walking below him as he was flying low. And the guy sticks his thumb out and basically looks as if he's going to hitch a ride, completely as a joke, just because the airplane is flying so low. And Alejandro did, in that moment, probably what no pilot has ever done in the history of the world, which is that he decided to turn his plane around and land directly in front of the farmer. all right, mate, do you want to get on board? And so the farmer was absolutely shocked, could not believe what had happened. Like a little joke had turned into the plane landing literally in front of him. And he ended up flying the guy home. As the guy got off the plane, he turned to Alejandro and said, "This has been the most amazing experience of my entire life. And the saddest." And Alejandro said, why has it been the saddest experience of your life? And he said, "It's really sad because this is the most important thing that's ever happened to me, but I'm never going to be able to tell anyone about this. Because if I tell anyone about this, they will never believe me and they're going to think I've gone insane. So this is a story that's just for us." And Alejandro just said, he just said to him, "Well, sometimes the best stories are the ones that you have to yourself. And other times, you just don't have to worry about what people think about you. You just have to say them." And so, and he told me this literally in a meeting that we had. We just encountered, and I filmed that story, and without any preparation, without any planning of angles, literally just tripod camera and recorded him. And that for me was my background in filmmaking. Because in that moment, I realised that every person, every single person in the world, has a fascinating story, has something amazing to tell you. You just have to be given the opportunity to do that. You just have to be willing to sit down and for half an hour or for an hour to listen. Because we live in a culture where, unfortunately, especially with my generation, where we just don't listen to people. We don't sit down and listen. We don't hear people out, especially people who are outside our friendship group. You know, the guy selling sweets in the corner, the man sitting at the park bench, or the woman who makes your coffee in the morning. You don't sit down and listen. But if you get a camera, it's a perfect pretext to do that. To say, "Hey, listen, that little anecdote you told me has the capability of being an incredible story that can really empower someone somewhere around the world." And that reflects, you are, with that story, a representative of everything that's magic about Colombia. And sitting down with him, you know, he got into his uniform, his pilot uniform, and seeing the pride in his face as he told that story, knowing that it was going to be, you know, on YouTube, knowing that his story was going to be immortalized in YouTube. That, for me, was the real wake-up call, where I realized that all you need is a camera, a tripod, and the ability and the desire to listen to other people's story. And I think that's what filmmaking is at the end of the day.
Fantastic, fantastic. I'm just going to reflect and say I'm completely 100% in agreement with you, although I would never want to get into an airplane knowing that a person had had 11 crashes. I don't know what the statistic is of all pilots and how many crashes they may have had, especially commercial ones, but what a wonderful story. And I think you're very very much on point when you say we've forgotten the ability to listen. Our attention span is so dispersed and so easily is flitting between subject to subject. That's today's world. I mean, on the cell phones, we're flicking through Twitter, everything else. And I'm guilty of it too, but you know, people don't watch movies anymore because they don't have the ability to sit through it. I mean, it's amazing, really. But But that's that. I mean, that's the way things are going. God, I mean, the dogs in my area today, I have to say, have just gone mental. I don't know what it is, but so I apologize to everyone. I think next time I'm not going to sit in my garden. Someone's let some angry dogs out. Danny, let me just say thank you, because we've come to the end of this show, but let me say thank you for your time. Thank you for sharing these anecdotes, these stories. It's been awesome. You know, for those of you out there interested in speaking to Danny, contacting him, just get to DannyConcha.com. You'll find his website. There's contact on there. And of course, look up his YouTube channel. These stories, these videos, they're excellent. They're excellent. You know, snippets of life in Colombia. So give me the scoop. What's the next one you'll be doing?
The next one, so the FARC fancy dress party I've been mentioning, that still needs to be edited, and I'm going to be working on that next week. I've also got a bit more work on the Medellin hip hop scene in Manrique La Cruz. We were busy filming a couple of weeks ago, busy filming a music video. We have an incredible movement called Hip Hop Agrario.
Okay.
I'd like to mention, I definitely suggest looking them up.
All right.
And it's a beautiful initiative which is working here in Medellin, and I think it's now spread to Bogota as well. Started by an incredible individual called Aka, a rapper, and basically the premise of that initiative is to combine hip-hop with agriculture, which sounds absolutely crazy, but what we're talking is about rappers, young rappers, who are using political conscious rap as a way of attracting young people in La Comuna 13 in San Javier, which is one of the most marginalized communities in Medellin, and also Manrique La Cruz, which is another a community with many displaced people, and has had a lot of social equality or inequality and stuff like that.
Okay.
Basically, they're attracting the youngsters through rap and attracting the older generations through agriculture, and getting both of them to do the same together to basically develop a passion for rap and agriculture. So every day, or I think maybe three times a week, the youngsters will get together, do a rap course together, share their lines, etc., and at the same time learn how to sow seeds, how to plant, how to prune, how to do all these different agricultural techniques, and learning from the older generations. And just like we spoke at the beginning with the trueque, the idea of this is to bridge the gap, in this case, not between the city and the countryside, but another huge gap, which is between the young generation and the older generations. And the idea of it is that those areas have suffered incredible trauma in the last few decades, with military interventions, and I'm sure you've probably heard of Operación Orion and Operación Mariscal, and all these kind of awful, awful moments of violence in their history. And the idea is that they think that the most important way of dealing with those is to create memory, and to create lasting memories so that you can preserve, so it's not forgotten. And the idea of bringing together the young and the old is create that transition of information of the older generations to educate the younger generations, and the younger generations take that education and to transmit it and make it transcend through rap music. And so that's one of the biggest projects we're working on lately.
Okay.
And I'm incredibly excited about it, because I think it will resonate with young and old, and it will resonate with people from the city, the urban, rap, all that kind of stuff, but also remembering that Colombia, with its displaced populations, and with Colombia is the most biodiverse per square meter in the world. So Colombia is inherently linked with nature, with the idea of sowing seeds, with the idea of planting and growth. And I think that through this documentary, we'll be able to project just how important nature and growth is to Colombia as a country.
Thank you, Danny. Thank you, Danny Concha, for all of your time. And thank you for sharing these experiences and, talking very openly about everything that's going on. We have to draw this to a close. Unfortunately, I think we could talk for hours, both of us. And hopefully when you're through Bogota or Mompos, let me know and we'll meet up for a coffee or a beer. And and talk further. But this has been episode 223 of Columbia Calling, and it's been an incredibly insightful, incredibly informative episode. So that always makes me happy. I know that my listeners will have enjoyed this back and forth with Danny. Look up his stuff again. Let me just say it, DannyConcha.com, and of course the YouTube channel Danny Concha. Very easy to find. So we're signing off today. So thank you again to Danny Concha out there in Medellin. It's been a real pleasure. This is episode 223. We'll be back next week with a further interviewee talking about Colombia in some way, shape, or form. So thank you for listening. Bye-bye.